What's going on, guys? This is the OC Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Rushnell, here with co-host Daniel Young. Hope you guys are having a wonderful Christmas or holiday festive season, because I know some people don't like the word, because, well, not that, it's just that there are a bunch of different holidays around this time of year. Today is actually Hanukkah, so happy Hanukkah to everybody celebrating. But Merry Christmas to everybody. Christmas comes up in 2 days. This is a special pre-Christmas episode for Orlando City. A lot has gone on over the past week. We are going to talk about some player grades. So me and Daniel are going to talk about last season a little bit, really quickly. And then after that, we're going to be looking at just this past week. Since we last spoke, we've had a signing today. We've had more rumors, and then we had some news releases and stuff like that to talk about. So joining me here today, of course, is my new co-host that I released last week, Daniel. So how you doing, Daniel?
Hey, good evening, Gavin, and good evening also to our listeners. It's a pleasure, and I know some of you celebrate different holidays, and it's Christmas or it's Hanukkah, whatever your celebration may be. I hope you enjoy it and your families are taken care of, and obviously, I'll wish you happy 2020 if we don't have another cast before.
Oh, yes, of course. The new year is coming up, so that as well. So let's get into the player grades. As you guys know, I've been doing the player grades, and I'd started the goalkeepers, did the right backs, did the left backs. Today is the center backs, and we have four center backs we're going to talk about. And the first one on the list is going to be our Swedish wall, Robin Jansson. Robin Jansson, he was new. We all had high expectations for him, and I would say he delivered. Would you agree with that, Daniel?
Absolutely. Even though he really only came in very late, but he showed his qualities. He has that that mystique, you know, that I think a lot of people enjoy when they sign a player, you know, outside of MLS and bring them over from Europe. And you know, he has a very distinctive style about him, and that was pretty much a no-nonsense, sort of calculated presence that he brought to our backline. And, you know, we had a big improvement with the backline, of course, this past season. He showed a lot of those qualities. He had those good workman-like physical attributes that we love, but he was pretty handy with the ball as well. And all in all, he was most likely our most effective defender, in my opinion. I would say that his signing was a success, and you know, it does hold a lot of credit for the front office when they can go out and pluck somebody out of obscurity and bring him in, and he's done well. I'm very happy with him.
Yeah, Robin Jansson was fantastic this past season for us. If we just look at his statistics here, 2,400 minutes, that is abnormal, to say the least, for an MLS player. You know, even center backs get switched out in and around mm-hmm. the season, and Jansson just seems so consistent in the back there. Every single time we needed the starting center backs in, he was there. Never really injured, never really suspended. Jansson was a constant in this team, and a pretty decent season stats-wise. You know, you see the 0.7 tackles per game, an interception per game, 4.2 clearances per game, and about 0.5 blocks per game. He was definitely up there as our best defender, not only stats-wise, but just when you eyeball him, when you watch what he's doing off the ball, he was fantastic for us. For me, he was a crucial signing, and I have to agree with you there. It's great to see our front office getting another player in on the cheap who made a massive impact on our team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one thing as well to consider is that he made 28 starts, and that's a lot of starts for somebody coming in to Major League Soccer from, you know, from Sweden, and coming in from, you know, the climate change from there over to Florida in those temperatures. I mean, we hear all this talk about prospective new signings and how they're going to adapt to the weather and the temperatures. I mean, he came in and he had his way with it, pretty much. He just did what he did. He comes in, the mark of a good footballer with a good professional mindset. Something else that I'm going to touch on when we discuss the fixtures for the next season as well, because I do have a point about that as well. He's just got a good professional mindset that I think he just comes in, whatever the circumstances are, and he played, and he was Mr. Reliable. And of the back four we had, I mean, Juan was obviously very reliable as well, but you can't really point anybody else out as someone that would have been known to be steady and someone that you would count on. So good for Janssen, absolutely.
Yeah. So if I were to go into it, my grade for him would be an A. For all the reasons you said, would you agree with that?
I would, absolutely. I think an A is definitely an appropriate grade. And when you factor in, you know, that he was playing next to Sane, who on his day was extremely good, but was also prone to having those bad games. And then we had, of course, the keeper errors behind him and the lack of midfield cover in front of him. I mean, I think he coped extraordinarily well and partnered with somebody maybe just a little bit different, maybe who can maybe sweep up the play behind him a little bit more and somebody in front of him to give him some coverage. I mean, I think we'll get even more out of him next season.
Yeah, and to move on to Lamine Sané, who you just mentioned, our other starting center back, many people sad to see him leave. We obviously saw his, or if you didn't see it, he put up a little Instagram story saying goodbye, Orlando, with the heartbreak emoji. You know, he truly, truly loved this club. I can say that. I just feel like he loved this club, and it is sad to see him go, but it was purely down to a wages thing. And unfortunately, he wasn't playing up to the standard that if you're going to be given those wages, and I never blame a player for getting those wages. I blame the club. Well, now he kind of got put in a predicament where he was getting paid too much, and we need that money somewhere else in the squad. And so we had to see one of, I think, a fan favorite. One of the fan favorites and someone who is a leader in the dressing room and someone who loves this club, we have to say goodbye to him just because of the way that deal, that contract was negotiated. And so we do see Sané leave. I thought he had his better of the two seasons overall. His best season for us, if you want to say. 26 appearances overall. Again, 2,200 minutes, so a little bit under Robin Janssen there. His stats read off 0.8 tackles per game, 1.9 interceptions per game. And he was a lot more mobile than Janssen. He would step up and try and make interceptions, so that doesn't surprise me there. 4.3 clearances per game, and then again, 0.5 blocks per game. What are your thoughts on us losing Sané and how he did last season?
Well, to address performance-wise, first of all, I think he coped very well. I think he was prone to a lack of concentration. Certainly a mistake every now and then, but every defender is. And there's some games, I mean, we were just completely under the cosh. I mean, my argument for Sané, and I'll give you an argument in defence of Sané. Yes, he was making a lot of money. And yes, he was certainly going to be on the list of players to leave, much like we talked about with Sasha Kljestan and his salary. It's a similar scenario with Sané, is that they have a quality in them that you just can't really afford to keep. And again, we look at Sané and think, well, in defence of him, did he have the right players around him the whole season? No, he didn't. He would have had maybe less pressure to deal with. Maybe he would have looked better statistically had he had more players around him that could have done more of the defensive work. So it's a little harsh on Sané, because I truly think he put everything out there every game and did his best, and you can only do what you can do, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd say in his defence, I think he performed very well. Obviously against him, the salary does count, and his age is 32 years old. He has room in his career probably for one more contract, or one more large contract, I should say, and Orlando's not in the position to give that to him. When you work back his salary back into euros or such, he'll probably find a club back in Europe that will give him close to what he wants. And factoring in that this is his last, probably his last contract he'll get, he's probably knows in his mind he has to leave as well. So the parting of ways is certainly expected. It's sad, but it's I think if Sané was a couple of years younger, we would probably have been trying to nail him down. It's just obviously one of those victims of the salary cap system that we're in. And I think based on performance and such, I would give him a B. That would be my grade for him. He stood out, not quite as much as Janssen, but he certainly was a good contributor to, you know, to our improvement last season.
Yeah, that's, you know, I have to agree with you. That's spot on. It's a B. He had lapses in judgment, and not to say Janssen didn't. He wasn't the perfect center back, but you know, he was just better than Sané. And you know, that's not to say Sané was terrible. I still give him a high grade. You still gave him a high grade. Mm-hmm. He was our starting center back, and yeah, he contributed to the most clean sheets in Orlando City history, tied and I think our best or second best defense ever in MLS era. So, you know, he contributed to that. He's a part of that, and he will be remembered as I think a good center back. I think he, I mean, we saw the impact when he went down injured and missed a lot of last season. You know, we had a chop and change. We had Jason Christ, and then we had brought in James O'Connor, and we saw how that all went. But I think part of it was Lamine Sané was injured, and he was our best center back on our roster, although we did have Spectre. But him and Spectre were the expected partnership that, like, never got to play together. And I think if they did, we would have had a lot better 2018. And unfortunately, it just never really materialized. So a B for him for this past season.
Yeah, with Sané and Spectre, I mean, if that partnership had materialized with, you know, Sané kind of being the stopper and Spectre being the covering defender, then Jason Christ might not have lost his job. So there's always a lot of permutations that come with everything like this. You know, I mean, a lot of people will say what they say with Jason Christ, but one thing that you never hear is that he never had his best set of players available. And you could argue James O'Connor probably didn't have his best set available when he first took over. Obviously, last season, we lost Sané for patches. We had to bring Janssen in. And then the people behind them were just not adequate enough. And again, it looks a little bit bad on Sané just because he did put everything out there. And, you know, some games you're just under so much pressure that inevitably you're going to make a mistake. Fatigue will set in, and then the mistake is made, and it just makes you look a lot worse than you actually are, I think.
Right. And now let's go to our backup center backs here. We'll just quickly glaze over them. Alex De Jong and Shane O'Neill. Alex De Jong getting 6 appearances, Shane O'Neill getting 11. He had a lot of love at the beginning of the season, but first we'll talk a little bit on Alex De Jong. I don't really think his stats mean all that much. I mean, it says here he's got almost 6 clearances a game. He will be returning next season. I was impressed with him at the beginning of the season. I know some people have had problems with Alex De Jong, with his positioning and just his overall quality as a center back. I think he's a good enough backup center back, but I thought he did really well in the middle of our 3-back system. Were you at all surprised to see him come back? And do you think he'll be a part of this, like a part of the team next season?
I'm not surprised that Alex De Jong was kept. He's a pretty low cost option, you know, to keep in the squad. He's domestic based, and also he played 6 games. He was shunted out to left back, I believe it was against Atlanta away, which never made sense to me. It's one of those 6 appearances where I think he was misused a little bit. He's certainly decent enough in a back three, and usually the beauty of playing with sort of 3 players in a two player area, so like 3 centre backs versus 2 centre backs, is that you can often get away with having 2 of those players kind of be an average quality of player, like you would say about De Jong or O'Neill. But then when you put them in a 2 where they really need to be switched on with positioning and defensive stability, then, you know, then that's where you're going to see the flaws coming out. So As a squad player, I like Dijon being around. I think if we do play over three, he can certainly do that job fairly well. And his distribution was, you know, fairly good from at least to the eye. You know, he has a percentage rate here of 80.8%, which isn't bad for a defender. And, you know, he seems to be somewhat savvy when it comes to playing on the deck a bit. As a starting choice centre back in a 4-3-3 system, I wouldn't be looking at him at all, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be a starter. And obviously, I don't think he'll be a starter even more after some news that we're going to talk about in just a second. But first, let's talk about O'Neal, probably the fan least favorite. and that comes from a poor introduction, which I wouldn't say is his fault. Near the end of last season, we were just such a horrible team. He wasn't going to come in and change anything. And a very poor start to this season, multiple mistakes on his end. Again, not really impressive statistics or really worth mentioning, but his mistakes outweigh whatever good he did on this team. And just to say, Alex Dijon got a B for me, because like he when he came in, I thought he was decent enough. What was your grade for him?
Mine would be actually about a C minus, if I'm honest.
A C.
I don't think he's a particularly bad player. We just didn't see enough of him. And as I mentioned, he was misused once or twice, which again is not really a barometer of how to use a player. I mean, we saw that with quite a few players last season, unfortunately, that they were misused and then kind of just cast aside. Shane O'Neill, actually, as we're onto him, has kind of become like a meme in Orlando City world. And I feel a bit bad for him because, as you said, he came into, you know, what is the worst team, you know, one of the worst teams in the MLS history.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just expect a player to just pick up and run. I mean, unless you're of a proven, established quality, with O'Neill, he never had the best start, and then the Chicago game where he fell asleep for the equalising goal in a game that we should have been taking the win, and then again Chicago on the last day of the season, he just looked completely out of his depth. It was it was kind of sad to see, but it was just, you know, he's not a player that, you know, I'm surprised that he's leaving. He probably needs a fresh start from Orlando, just like Orlando needs, you know, to rejig its backline options.
Yeah, and don't forget the horrible back pass against Montreal, I believe. I mean, he had more than just the Chicago mistake. He was pretty poor those first few games, and fans were really calling for him to exit the team, and he ended up exiting the team after Sané and Janssen finally formed their partnership, and boy, were we glad to see that. I've given him a D. I thought he was poor this season. He wasn't really all that useful. I think he scored a goal in the Open Cup game against Memphis. But other than that, he was... Oh, no, he didn't score at all. Did he score
Janssen
in that
scored.
Game? He won a penalty. Yeah. That's what he did. He won a penalty. Yeah. Poor season overall.
He's poor.
So he gets a D.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think a D is suitable, and he goes back to my point with Dijon, is that you can play a, you know, like a squad player type of guy in a system, like in the back three, where their flaws can be masked a little bit because there's just the strength of numbers kind of to cover them up. But yeah, I mean, I forgot about the back pass against the Montreal team. That was one of our early games, and that was one of the games actually where I think Montreal showed teams how they could beat Orlando. So it was just kind of a catastrophic game for him and for the club, I think, at that point in the season.
Yep. And what was your grade for him?
Oh, for O'Neill, it was a D.
Okay, yeah. All right, so let's move on to some positive news. Orlando City today, Monday, December 23rd, have signed Rodrigo Schlegel from Racing Club on a free loan. with an option to buy, which looks like it's going to be $600,000. And I think they said for like 70% of his rights. Another loan with an option to buy. We have been reported to do that with Antonio Carlos. We have done that with Andres Pereira. We did that with Juan. And now we're doing it with Rodrigo Schlegel. The, forgot to say, 22-year-old center back. He is 5'11". Talk with me, Daniel, about your thoughts on this transfer.
Well, I like the, I mean, the setup of the deal is good. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, we make a couple of signings that are fully permanent deals, you know, from the offset. Mm-hmm. With Schlegel, he looks to be relatively low risk. He's, I think I only saw he had 5 appearances, about 450 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. And he's well down the pecking order. But then Racing Club are a huge team. You know, they've got a famed academy with a lot of players coming off the pipeline. So it's very similar to what you see with a lot of other big teams, in that players will just come off that conveyor belt and they won't make any appearances, but they get the benefit of practicing and training every day with good, strong players. So the signing is a little bit of a shot in the dark for us, but I'm quite encouraged by it. He has got some pedigree. He's 22. His height doesn't really concern me. I think that he'll play probably in a free, or maybe you can even play as a right back or in midfield. We don't know really enough about him to be able to decide that. I don't believe he's going to be a starter, but again, it's low risk. If it doesn't work, then he can head back. And it reminds me a lot of that signing we made a few years back. I think his name was Pereira. The young Brazilian centre-back we had, I think he was only 18, but he came in on a loan deal, I believe, and we didn't keep him, we sent him back. But it's good. I mean, it gives the club a chance to have a look at him, and he can have a look at Orlando, and you never know, it could be just another Janssen-type deal, and if not, at least we're not stuck, you know, past this year. So I'm fairly happy with it, but obviously we want a starting calibre centre-back to be signed.
Yeah, and I'm sure the club have done their homework, Ricardo Moreira and Luis Muzy. I mean, there were reports, I guess, something surfaced that in June we had gone and looked at him, and there was a report about that, and just nobody even batted an eyelid at it. It just, you know, just another one of those reports. But we did end up signing the player. Like you said, 5 appearances. 3 yellow cards. but I was talking to one of my good friends about it, who knows a lot about soccer down in South America, and he said Racing Club like to play a wide open style of play, so they will leave a lot of spaces open in front of their defense, and so I think that's mainly what it comes down to. So you know, when you have players running at you, you need to make fouls sometimes. We see Manchester City do it in England all the time. Tactical fouls, bring the player down, don't let them get past you, take the yellow card. And so in his 5 appearances, I'm sure that's what happened. He had a lot of open spaces in front of him, and he was instructed to take the player down and take the yellow card. So I wouldn't be too worried about that kind of yellow card streak, as it's going to be a little bit different here in Orlando. I'm sure under Pereira, we're going to be very compact, not as stretched, as that seemed to be one of our problems last season, is we would get too stretched up at times. So I'm happy for it. I agree with you. I don't think he's gonna be a starter. I would like to be pleasantly surprised to see him become a starter, but I'm not really expecting much out of him this season. I just hope we see enough to warrant a $600,000 transfer fee, so he can come back in, and we don't have to go and find a whole nother center back for cheap.
Yeah, I mean, it's one other thing. I mean, the way the Argentine coaches like to play is, like you say, it's wide open and such. So they have a very specific set of roles for those defenders and for the midfielders as well. You know, my favorite coach is actually Argentine, and you know, Marcelo Bielsa. I'm sure you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. So he manages my team, Leeds United, and I watched the way they play, and he's got, you know, the similar tactical principles to a lot of those Argentine coaches, and he often goes with, you know, the most experienced defenders, because they're the ones that know how to get away with it. Putting in someone at 22, with only a few appearances is a risk for them as well. So it's like a case of the player might not be that bad. He could be a good player. It's just that in a bigger club, they might not be willing to stake, you know, 3 points on the line, you know, or 6 points on the line and give him a run of games in doing so. It's kind of a catch 22, but I think that he will be bedding into a more compact system. You know, Orlando are not going to be able to play that way, you would imagine, and he'll probably benefit from minutes with us. And it's a similar concept to what I explained the last time with our midfield signings, is that our team cannot really get much worse statistically over the season. I mean, and I don't want to say, I think the league table kind of, you know, it wasn't kind to us last season, but we did play pretty well in some parts. But we're in a position where we can afford to give guys those minutes, I believe. I think we're going to do better than last season. And I think doing so, we're going to give players experience. So it comes up. I mean, 600,000 for a young centre-back is nothing. If they turn out to be good, they're well worth it. I hope that it works out.
Yeah, at this point in his career, he might not be worth 600,000, but let's say he has an amazing season, and next season he could be worth 2 million to an MLS side. So I think they raised his price a little bit, and we're just going to have to see how he does. I'm excited about it.
You'd be stupid not to, because, you know, if you're a club that's brought through these young guys off your academy, you're going to build in that potential into the valuation. You know, there's no point working on him. He's probably been at that club since he was like 10 or 11. And then you sell them for like 50,000. I mean, what's the point in that? You know,
right.
They've got to factor in the potential. I mean, there's this, you know, this dual party ownership factor as well, which I don't particularly like, but it's there. So someone else has got 30% of those rights as well. So, you know, there's all these different things to consider. But 600,000 for a centre back that, if he turns out to be good, could be a good 3 or 4 year investment, or he could be sold on for a lot more. It's a good move. I'm very happy with that type of transfer, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. And I like the point that you say that he could be sold on. I think we need to start bringing in players that we can sell on to generate revenue. But first, he'll have to the desire. Perfect.
Yeah.
He will need the desire to get into the team, and he will need to kind of hit the ground running when he gets his chance in preseason. If he has a good game in preseason, I think if we haven't brought anybody else in before then he will try to lock down that spot, because he's going to look at his option at the options right now, and he's going to think, I have a chance to get into that side. I have a chance to stamp my foot on it and be Janssen's partner. If we are looking to have him as a center back, he will want to take that chance. I think as a 22-year-old in America, he is going to be raring at the bit to get into that starting lineup and to really make a name for himself in MLS.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is a, you know, probably a lower level of football or soccer, so to speak. But then on the other hand, it's a very good ceiling for achievement. I mean, every team gets a chance in MLS to rebuild every year, and it's not always possible, but you know, there is always a possibility that the team you join is going to get in the playoffs and then may win the whole thing the next year. You just never know. He could be closer to achieving major honors as a first team player with Orlando than he would be at his current club, and I believe that's what a lot of young players look at. It's a platform to get here, win a trophy, and then move on. And though we don't like to speak of Atlanta, they've kind of set the model with that type of purchase, albeit with bigger investments, but they've managed to bring some players in, give them the platform, and then, you know, someone like Almiron will go on for big money, and Orlando can only hope to do the same thing, which I believe they will eventually.
Yeah, we need to, and I think that's something Muzy and the rest of them are looking at. If you look into Andres Pereira, I mean, he's only, 19 years old. He's going to come in. If he's here for 4 or 5 seasons, that means he's done really good. He has upped his value, and we could sell him somewhere for $6 million.
Yeah.
Like,
the way inflation's going right now, inflation's going right now, I mean, we would hope it'd be a lot more than $6 million. You would be looking at 10. I mean, I know, like with Mendes, a lot of supporters feel that Mendes is going to be the first sort of 10 million plus player that Orlando sell. You know, whether he is or not, we don't know, but it would just be Orlando's luck for the economy to crash just when we get one, you know. So, but no, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, you're buying potential because you have to accept in Major League Soccer that, you know, the majority of teams are going to lose their best players eventually. And if you're going to lose them, then you lose them for top dollar. You don't lose them for less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like kind of like what we did with Laren. We should have gotten Laren out of the door for a lot more money than we did, I feel like.
Well, Laren did the dirty on the club.
Yep. Okay, so now let's go on to almost signed players. We're going to first talk about another center back, Antonio Carlos. This was reported earlier this week. An older center back. I'm 30 years old, I want to say. I think I'm right there. I might be wrong there. But another center back, he comes from Flamengo, and he would be on a loan with an option to buy, if reports are to be believed. Do you see this happening now after the Schlegel transfer went through, or do you think he will just be left in the dust and not be joining our team?
I mean, it's strange that it's been spoken of and not completed as yet. I mean, I think even the mainland reported it, and they're very reputable usually when it comes to this story. So I'm pretty sure there's some smoke, you know, coming from the fire, so to speak. I'm a little concerned it's not been done as yet, because I looked him up, you know, sort of his attributes and his pedigree. It seems like he'd be a good fit just to come straight into the lineup, and we don't have to worry about that position. It's odd, but then he's probably getting attention from other teams as well. We have to remember there's a lot of teams right now that are starting a season in a couple of months, and we just have to hope, just like with Mancano, that, you know, we're going to be able to tie the deal up before another club gets before us.
Right, and before I even say anything else, I was totally wrong. I was thinking of a totally different player. He's 26 years old. He is from Palmeiras. So I was very, 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 very wrong.
Yeah, I was looking at this stat sheet, and I'm thinking, hang on a second, am I looking at the right player? But yeah, I had the correct one here.
Yeah, I'm looking at the right player.
26 is a great age for a centre back. I mean, a centre back doesn't typically get in their prime until they get to 29 or 30 years old. So we're effectively getting a player that's not even hit his peak yet. And, you know, 6'3". He's going to be good from defending at set pieces. He's going to have a job, you would think, alongside Janssen to, you know, one of them's going to pick up the big strikers and the other can kind of do the rest of the defending, which I think is going to be a benefit to us as a whole. He looks decent. I mean, he seems like he's just moved around quite a bit. And he hasn't played a lot recently. And I think I saw something you'd mentioned about his team supporters being happy for him to leave. Now, that's obviously a concern, but again, we have Orlando fans that have been happy for certain players to go. So it happens everywhere. I believe I'll just trust the front office on this one and, you know, try and be positive about it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, a Brazilian player in a Brazilian league, which is a lot better than MLS right now. If they're happy for him to leave, maybe MLS is just his level. You know, I'm going to push this back to Arsenal. We have a player that many are familiar with named Shkodran Mustafi, who we all us Arsenal fans do not like. He was amazing at Valencia, where we bought him from. He had a very good time there. We buy him. He comes in, had a very good start. I think he went 23 games unbeaten or something like that. And then he just fell off the face of the earth, was making mistakes left, right, and center. And now we all want him gone. We would all be very, very, very happy to see him leave. That doesn't mean he's just an awful player. Now, it does worry me that this guy has some bad traits about him and mistakes in his game. Hopefully he would come in. If he does come in, I think he would be seen as a starter still. You know, 26 compared to the 22-year-old Argentine. If he were to come in, I think they would look at him as a starter, but it would breed competition. You know, Antonio Carlos would want to get that starting spot. Okay, Schlegel would be fighting for it as a 22-year-old. Alex de Jong doesn't want to be left in the dust. I mean, it's going to create competition. We all know Janssen's there, but even he might be kind of like, oh, wait a second, we're bringing in a lot of center backs. I need to up my game even more than I already have, because if I start making mistakes, if I start slowing down and Carlos and Schlegel are back there trying to get into the team, I'm going to be the one left on the bench. I mean, all the players have a clean slate with Oscar Pereja.
It's not just a clean slate. It's different coaching as well. And, you know, I've often wondered, just having watched Orlando from game to game last season, you know, I did question, you know, how many plans did they train? I mean, like, how many plans did they work on? Like, did we have a plan B? Do we have a plan C? Our defending, you know, was very, very poor a lot of times. So, I mean, it remains to be seen if Pereja can improve that, and if he can drill his players appropriately to defend better. But also, with these incoming players, I am concerned with this particular one, that he's had 7 clubs already. He's only 26. So he's not found his place yet. And it's one of two things. He's either not found his place and he's going to find it with Orlando and do well, oh, he hasn't found his place because he's got, like you say, a lot of traits about him that are not desirable. So we have to try to err on the positive side of it and just think, well, look, maybe he just needs a home, like most players do. And when he finds it, he'll be comfortable.
We'll soon know. Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, he's been on loan his whole entire professional career.
Yeah.
He's just been on loan everywhere. Loan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he needs somewhere to be permanent, and I would hope that we would make him permanent and give him some stability. You know, he's been moving, like you said, he's been moving around. He's been 7 clubs in 6 years or what, at 26 years old. He needs to settle down and find a club that's right for him. Maybe he feels MLS is what's right for him.
Yeah, and he's at an age where he can get better. I feel like what you're saying with the loan moves, it's almost what you could call Chelsea syndrome. You know, they just have this habit of stockpiling players and farming them out to this club and that club and everywhere else. And then, you know, several of them disappear off and into obscurity, and, you know, a couple of them go on and have some fairly decent careers. You know, a lot of Brazilian teams seem to do that as well. And then they share the players with other teams. It's all kind of a very strange scenario for a player. And, you know, I honestly couldn't blame him for wanting to get away and probably get to MLS or a league, you know, where he's going to be at the same club for at least 1 year and know that he's going to have an opportunity. And I hope it works out for him. I think he looks pedigree-wise to have something about him. It's just like you say, he needs a place to be consistent for him as well as him needing to be consistent for the team and to show him what he's got. I believe he'll be able to do it, but it's another shot in the dark. I would like us to be looking at a defender that, you know, you could even someone in MLS that is established and able to come in and make an immediate impact. If we can't do that, then this is going to be our next option. So let's just hope it works out.
Yes, I really do hope this one works out. Another one that I really hope works out, Junior Urso out of Corinthians. I'm going to get it right this time. He is 30 years old. He plays in the center of midfield. 27 goals or 27 games and 3 goals this past season in the Brazilian league. It's looking like we're going to get him kind of cheap, kind of less than what he's worth. And that is because Corinthians have been struggling to pay him. And so we're going to get him for what looks like around 900,000 US dollars, about 3.6 million Brazilian dollars, but 900,000 US dollars. And it's looking like he's going to be on a 4-year deal, which has caused some concern for Orlando City fans because he is 30 years old. I think the structure of the deal is going to be a 2+2. So a 2-year deal with a 2-year extension, club selected extension, so we can say yes, we want to do that, or no, we don't. I'm happy with it. I think he is going to fit right in. He looks like a runner. He looks like he is going to bring a lot to the team. It's looking like this deal's going to get done. It's just a matter of time before it gets announced. What are your thoughts on the Corinthians player coming to Orlando?
I think is a good pedigree. Corinthians is a, well-known, established side. And again, if you're able to play consistently in that team, then you have to be a fairly decent player. I'm not too concerned about the contract. If it was just a straight 4-year deal, then I can understand completely the concern with the deal. But a 2+2 makes it right for Orlando. He's still got a couple of years left as a midfield player, and again, it goes into my argument that I tried to discuss with the centre backs that if we're looking in a system of three players in the middle, then you can get away with one of the players' legs maybe not being as efficient as they once were. I'd be very concerned if we were playing a 4-4-2 with a defensive midfielder 30 plus in the middle, because you're just asking for trouble. You're asking for a player to commit physically to something that he's not able to do. Past the age of 30. If we're going with three in the middle, then I don't see an issue with it, if I'm honest. I think statistically, what stands out for me, he's got his 1.6 tackles a game, 1.3 fouls. I mean, that kind of tells you, he's going to be a gritty type of player, which I believe we do need. We've had a habit in Orlando of going to teams and just being bullied, and we need some tougher characters. So I think that Urso is going to fit into that mold that we need. And then in addition, he's got plenty of experience, which again is good. I mean, I think if I'm right, this will probably make him our oldest midfielder on the books. So yeah, pretty much I'd say that. I think even Yuri Russell, he's still only in his mid-20s, I think, or 26, 27-ish. So
And what's Pereira's just on the cusp of 30?
oh yeah, Pereira. So yeah, but I don't consider Pereira as an out-and-out midfield player. I'm more thinking sort of in those deeper positions. He's definitely going to be the most senior. Yeah, for Pereira, for me, I don't always consider like a number 10 type as a midfielder. I always think of them as another attacker. So for me, in that hotbed position in midfield where you need some gritty experience, maybe someone who knows how to win the ball and to have a little bit of craft about them in the times when you need to slow a game down, he looks like he's going to fit that for us. So I'm pretty happy with the signing. Not concerned really, given that the likelihood is we're going to play with three in midfield anyway. I think he'll good fit. He'll complement the people around him, I think.
I have to agree with all that. I think he's going to be, like you said, the most experienced player in that little group of players once he does come in. And I'm sh I think he'll be in line to start alongside Jackson Mendes. I think they're
I think so.
a similar type of player. They like to run around and win the ball and be gritty, but I think he is going to be the more offensive one of those two. Obviously, you see his goal statistics. I think he's had six or seven in the last two seasons, but also he just, whenever you look at his highlights, he seems always up the field. He always seems in that final third trying to get something working. So I would be happy with him to sign. I'd be happy with him to start. It'd be unfortunate for Yuri Rossell, who has done nothing but not be a starter for this team, and we've all wanted to see how he would do as a starter. But if you're going to have someone who can come in for way cheaper than what they're worth, then you have to do it. You have to pull the plug. You have to make sure that we're going to have enough quality in this team to get us in the playoffs in the East, because the East is going to be very competitive next season.
Yeah, it's not getting any easier. So, I'm all for the signing. He looks like he's someone who plays just a little further. He'll be like an archetypal number eight, you would think. It does raise a question in my mind as to why we just didn't try and keep Christian Aguirre, who does have 4 years young. He's 4 years younger than this fella. But I'm sure the front office has reasons, and maybe Aguirre decided as well that he wanted a bit more security. So, it's. I feel like he'll be a similar player to Higuita in the sense that he'll play just a little further up. But again, Higuita's gone and Urso's coming in, so I'll go with that for now.
Well, I remember the report that Pareja said he didn't want Higuita because of the financials. So maybe he just feels this is a better use of that money.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a reason for that nature with Pereira not wanting the player. And I'm glad that Pereira said that, because even if I don't agree with Higuita being allowed to leave, I am happy with the fact that a coach is having a say in who's coming in, because I think there's a lot of suspicion that, you know, James O'Connor didn't get to pick the players he wanted. And it's probably a good thing in hindsight, because he's, you know, I don't think he was ever going to be around long term anyway. But if they're allowing Pereira the ability to pick players, or at least make a determination on who he wants, then I'm all for it, even if I don't agree with the decisions in every single instance. So yep. It's good.
Yeah, so the last two bits of rumors, which at this point in the stage of both of these transfers, they are rumors. The first one, I'm just going to touch on Germán Cano, the one we all want to happen, the one we all are dreaming of happening. If we don't get any other signings in, we all just want to see Germán Cano on this team. It's looking like it's not going to happen. Multiple reports saying we are out of the running. Pareja has come out and said that we are still in discussions, but I don't know, just a gut feeling that we're not going to end up with him. And he wants to get as much money as possible out of the more competitive leagues as he is going up in age. So that's all I really wanted to say on him. And then today there was a quick report that Mendez is rumored to be a signing for somewhere. I don't remember what team it was, but, you know, he's a young player and, you know, people are going to be interested in him. I don't think he'll be leaving. God, I hope he isn't leaving. You know, maybe the only thing I would say is if that rumor comes out to be true and he leaves, I would really hope that Mendez would leave for a good 4, 5, 6, 7 million, and then we bring Urso in for 900,000 as a quick fix in his role. That would be my only hope in that world where Mendez leaves and Urso comes in, and that he would just be a replacement for Mendez. I really hope that isn't what's happening, but if it does, that's got to be the reason. Any thoughts on these last two transfer rumors?
Well, with Cano, I think, first of all, I understand the player wanting to get the best deal. He's at that age where it's going to be his last big contract. Mm-hmm. So I understand his point completely, but on the same token, if I'm Orlando City, I'm hoping that I've got, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, right, and that we go for somebody else. And the only concern I have with Cano is that, you know, if he really wants to be in Orlando, I think the deal would have been done already, to be honest. We wouldn't be asking these questions if he wanted to be there. So we have to be careful as a team that we don't start overpaying a 31-year-old striker who may or may not, you know, make the cut for us, and who may or may not really want to be there. You know, we have to ask that question, and I think it's a fair question to ask. You know, I'm hoping that the club, I'm pretty sure the club's working on other options as well, but I would not be letting Cano make his decision on the other side of Christmas. I would be saying, look, we want a decision in the next week, or we're going to move on. And I hope they do, because pre-season starts, you know, a few weeks into January. And ideally, a coach is going to want every single one of his players there. You don't want this going on into February and then a player missing the important part of pre-season and not being used to the system and everything else. You know, you want these things done quickly so that they can get to Orlando, they can get moved in, they can get acclimated and used to everything before they start training. And as for the Mendez rumour, I don't really think there's anything in it. The only way it would make sense to Orlando is if they were going to make a profit, you know, and you'd be looking at maybe 1 to 2 million profit at the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Mendez, in my opinion, he showed promise, but he didn't show enough to be worth 3 or 4 times worth what we paid. I don't think he's quite at that level yet. He could be next season for us, but we would have to sell him on for a profit and have somebody coming in. And I don't think Mendez is going anywhere. Mutz has already said that he sees Mendez as a part of his plans, and I think that will be where he is. He'll be in Orlando next season.
Yeah, I think so too. That was just me trying to get my head around why we would even think about selling him. But that's it for transfer rumors. That's really all we've got from this week. Hopefully some deals go over the line next week. And now just some quick bits of news to talk about. The first one was our fixtures were released, and we, as we all know, we are going to be not playing against three teams this season. We got the luckiest draw we possibly could have, in my opinion. We're going to be missing the former MLS Cup champions in Seattle, the former Supporters Shield champions in LAFC, and a team who is looking to be on the rise under Mateus Almeida, San Jose, three teams that we lost to last season. What are your thoughts on these teams that we ended up missing, like how lucky we were, really, and then also missing teams and missing these teams, or just teams in general, sorry?
Honestly, the first word that came to mind is not something that I can really say on your podcast. It begins with F, and that's all you need to know. I don't know, maybe the league is growing too big. You know, I think that some supporters, they like the system where you play every other team at least once. You know, you like to have those experiences. I mean, I always liked it when the LA teams come to Orlando, and last season they enjoyed those games, even though we didn't win either of them. You know, and I feel that's part of the league experience, is that it's to be able to play everybody, and that's customary everywhere, not just in this country. So it makes me think that, you know, eventually they're gonna wean off in maybe into just two leagues eventually, which I think would be good. But I'm not gonna start a whole pro-rel argument on the podcast. So what it comes down to is that Orlando's got a very lucky draw, and the first thing that came to mind was that it's like when you go somewhere and someone's trying to sell you a timeshare, and they really want you to buy it, and they start giving you every option possible to buy it. And in the end, we've been given these concessions now. We don't have to make those three very long journeys, which I think would probably happen over the summer as well. It gives us 9 points there that, you know, we lost last season that we could potentially gain elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to look at that now as a gift and an advantage. And I don't want to hear from any Orlando City supporters how we're going to struggle all summer and how we're going to keep losing games. That's a mentality thing. And now we've just taken three very hard games out of the mix. So we should be looking at that as a golden opportunity. And I'm sure the coach will be looking at it the same way. He'll be counting his blessings. But as a supporter, I don't know what to tell you about the league. It just seems very odd that teams are not playing certain other teams, and there's no real formula as to why. It's not so much that it's happening that's the concern, it's just that there's no real reason for it. And it's just really bizarre, you know, other than the fact there's too many teams, and then you have to start asking the question, well, do we have too many teams in the league, and what does that mean for the league? So, I don't know, we'll have to see how it plays out, but from a sporting perspective, Orlando's been given a very good gift here, so they have to make the most of it, and they're getting every advantage going now. Like I say, when you're trying to buy a timeshare and they're throwing it at you and giving you every benefit possible, Orlando's been given every chance now to make the playoffs. You've just taken those three hard games off of us. I'm hoping that we make the most of it.
Yeah, we really need to make the most of it. The one thing I will say is Seattle and San Jose would have been at home. We only would have had to go to LAFC away, since we played San Jose and Seattle away last season. So
that's a fair point. Yeah, I kind of disregarded that. But even so, but still, it's still difficult games.
I mean, MLS Cup champion and a team that killed us 3-0 last season. Yeah. I mean, we looked terrible against them. We looked like we couldn't care. I wouldn't have seen us winning any of those games. Obviously, you know, if we're going into the season having good form, I would think differently. But those are still three very tough games that we don't have to deal with anymore. And I will say it's a gift. I will say it's a gift, just like you said. But I will not say I'm happy with it. I hate the way this is going. I hate how now we're going to have somebody who's going to lift the supporter shield who did not play three teams. Mm-hmm. How can you say you're the best in the league when you did not play against three teams? I just don't understand it. And then we're going to have the MLS Cup, and that's going to be influenced in different ways, because teams below us who will there will be teams below us in the league, unless we get 12, who lost points to LAFC, Seattle, or San Jose, and we did not because we didn't play them. How is that any fair?
It's not. I mean, you know, if you get to a position at the end of the season, which depends on, you know, like a point or 2 points, and then everyone starts comparing fixture lists and says, well, you know, we lost to Seattle this season, but Orlando didn't because Orlando didn't play them. I mean, that's a very legitimate argument, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like in the Premier League if they bring up two more teams and make it a 22-team league, and then someone comes in and says, all right, by the way, Burnley don't have to play Liverpool and Arsenal this season, and then Burnley end up staying up with 3 points more than the team below them, who got beat by both those teams. It wouldn't
They're
be
going
fair.
Down.
Yeah, they go down, and you're playing a standard of opposition. It's not that it's three teams missing. It's like they've just picked three good teams, and then, like I said, there doesn't seem to be any method. It's almost like they put the names in the hat and they just said, okay, we're just going to draw these out and we're just going to see what happens. And it does make you question a little bit just the integrity of the product, because I know that the product is the word that's bandied around. Like you say, it's kind of weakened because you're not playing every team. How can you stake a claim to be the best? And yet you've not played all of the teams. It's just weird. And I always think back to like in June and July where we have sometimes like a 3 week break. Can there not be room for one or two more fixtures over the season on the schedule where they could play a couple more games? I think they could. But I suppose there's so much strength given to the Gold Cup and the national team games and everything that they have to sometimes take these long breaks. They're not putting the league first and the integrity of the league by doing this. So I'm hopeful that it's a one season thing and that once they finish with the current expansion that they'll restructure it in a way that, you know, is at least fairer to everybody else. But I'm not really sure how they can do it when you're just precluding teams from playing one team in one conference and letting the other teams play that team. I don't know. It's just one big mess, really, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the F word you were looking for is foolish. And
really, is that what it is? Foolish.
Yeah, it's definitely foolish. And it's incompetent. It's incompetence from the league. I mean, if you're going to bring these teams in on this big money, I mean, Charlotte just got announced for $325 million. If you're going to bring them in, you better have a plan to make sure it works. And this, to me, is not a plan that works. This is we're just going to put some duct tape over it until we come up with a better solution. And I really liked the way this last season was set up. Everybody plays everybody in their conference twice, home and away. Everybody plays the one in the other conference once, home and away, switches every season.
I
loved that setup. Now you want to have the 34 game season again? All right, that doesn't work. What are you going to do then?
Well, I'm thinking that I'm wondering if the current negotiations with the, you know, with the players' union, I wonder if that's having an effect on it, because those are all long distance trips, either for Orlando or for the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this talk about charter flights and accommodations for players, you know, for long distance, which, you know, for the record, I 110% agree that if a squad of players is traveling for a sporting event, then they should be going on their private plane and getting there in good time to prepare. I think Orlando made it to a game one time. I think their opponents made it down here on the morning of the game, like a couple of hours before kickoff. It's ridiculous. So I mean, I'm beginning to wonder if that's playing a part in this whole scheme to begin with, because 3 games, I mean, it would take us up to a 37 game season, and if you've got a squad of 30 players, there's no reason in my mind you cannot manage 37 games, honestly. I'm beginning to think it's more to do with the schematics, with the flights and the player concessions and the, you know, taking care of them that's maybe influencing that decision. And if so, then that means you're entwining politics with the sport, and that's just not a good thing. So you should be I don't know, I'm hoping MLS kind of, this is a one-off thing and that the following season it doesn't happen. And that would be, I'd be very annoyed if it happened again because it just casts doubt over the achievements. I mean, Orlando, it'll be Orlando's luck to make the playoffs and to do well this season, and then it'll be tarnished with the fact that, you know, they didn't play all the teams. It's just, you know, it's kind of a little mockery, really, of the whole system.
Yeah, like, this isn't the NFL. You know, in the NFL, not all the teams play all the teams. It's impossible. In MLS, it should be possible. I don't care. You need to find a way because it's soccer. Every team plays every team around the world. There isn't another league, or at least not another reputable league like MLS is becoming, that does this. That just says, okay, these two teams, these three teams, you're not going to play against them. Like, come on. Like, you want us to be taken seriously around the world? This is not the way to do it.
Well, I just want them to spell out the criteria. What made you pick the teams you picked? That's all I want to know. If they come up with some, you know, logistical reason as to why they selected the choices that they did, then it would be understandable, even if you don't agree with it. But I don't know.
But like Vancouver is further than Seattle, right? Mm-hmm. Or San Jose. Yep. Like, so why was Vancouver in there? We were all expecting to see Vancouver in there because that's the one that makes the most sense. And that wouldn't have been fair because it's looking like Vancouver is going to have another rough year.
Yeah.
Like, what happens when the team in first place, a team that just missed the playoffs, they didn't play the three worst teams in the league in the Eastern Conference.
Like, that's right.
It's just, it's stupid. I could go on and on about it, but it's sad. It's sad because the MLS was making good moves with the playoffs and the new system there, the league and the new system there. Everybody was excited to see how the league would shape up because now it looks like home fixtures are important in the playoffs, right? Well, now they've just gone and absolutely ruined that. And it's just like, now the whole talk is, this team isn't playing this team. This team isn't playing this team. How is this fair? Blah, blah, blah. They need to fix it. Right? So it's sad because we were moving up and now we've taken two or three steps back down.
And again, I come back to my original point that when you're carrying a squad of 30 players and you could potentially call upon, you know, the OCB or your academy for players to fill in if you need some bodies on the bench or whatever. I mean, you need 11 players from potentially a pool of 50. I mean, you should be able to fulfill three extra games. You know, and that's not considering the point I made about the flights and the travel, which I suspect might have something to do with the decision to begin with. But, you know, it doesn't make much sense to me. I'm just kind of baffled by it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, so am I. It needs to be fixed by next season, like you said. Mm-hmm. Last little bits of news here. OCB signed Neveleff. Nobody was really surprised about that. There were reports, and it was quite obvious that he was going to be signed. It was just a matter of when. So Neveleff joins. And then there was some debate about the Cure Bowl I wanted to talk to you about. Some people saying that they didn't like that we were having football played on our pitch, American football. I think the groundsmen have plenty of time to get the pitch ready for preseason, and it's a sporting event that brings in popularity to the team. Oh, this is Orlando City Soccer Club Stadium. A National Bowl game was played at our stadium. So now whoever watched that game knows this stadium in Orlando is to Orlando City, and now that just brings more popularity to the team. And then they look it up. Oh, the team has Nani on the team. That's kind of cool. Maybe we get a couple of fans that way. It also brings in money for charity. It was the Cure Bowl. It was called Cure for a reason, as in cure for breast cancer. I don't really see a problem with this at all. I loved the move by the front office to get this done. And I hope more moves like this happen in the future.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I would be annoyed if it was sort of regular season games being played there. you know, maybe like by, you know, by UCF or by a different, you know, maybe an
no,
NFL
yeah,
team coming
yeah.
up. I wouldn't be too enthusiastic about that, because that's just kind of a more of a business arrangement. But I don't see how anybody can really have an issue when the funds are being raised for charity. You know, I mean, as with most charities, whether it be a cancer charity or a charity trying to find a cure for AIDS or something, the chances are is that we all know someone that's been afflicted by those illnesses and those diseases. And anything that's been done by the club or by any entity to try and raise awareness or finances to fight those battles for other people, I think you should applaud that. And I like the positive press that Orlando should get for that. And just like they're used as a platform to raise some funds. And it's not like the team is doing anything in December. I mean, we're out of the league, we're out of the playoffs in October, and we don't play till February. So it's, you know, they've got more than enough time to get that field looking the way it needs to do. And there's games coming up in January as well for the Florida Cup. So I'm pretty sure that they've got it in hand. I'm not even concerned about it, to be honest.
Neither am I. Some people are concerned about it. I'm not concerned about it.
It's more of a pride thing, more like, you know, this is our stadium, don't come here sort of thing. But, you know, we were playing the Citrus Bowl for quite a while before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that it's not quite the same argument, but it's, you know, it's sometimes what you do. I think as a community, you sometimes have to find a way to function. And the only way of getting soccer in the community at that time, you know, in the MLS, was by playing at the Citrus Bowl. So sometimes needs must, and the need in this instance was for charity. I don't think you can really argue with that.
No, I don't think you can at all.
Not as a one-off, no. Once a year or something is fine with me. I don't care about that really.
All right, well, that will just about wrap it up from us. I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday break. Christmas is in 2 days. I hope you guys enjoy your Christmas, enjoy your family time. I know I've got a lot of family in town. They're actually waiting for me to come downstairs and spend some time with them. So we will sign off there. Daniel, thank you for, thank you for coming on the show, because you're part of the show now. Thank you for being my co-host.
No, very welcome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, till next time, Daniel.
Yep, till next time. Happy Christmas, and we'll see you soon. Won't you follow me?
Here's the cross. Quickly here, Nani gets in behind. Here's Nani with a